Our candidate forum series continues in this half hour. We will welcome your questions for State Senator Kathleen Vinehout at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Thursday, April the 26th. We just heard from Secretary of State Doug LaFollette, another candidate running in the recall primary for governor on May the 8th. On Tuesday of this week, we heard from former Dane County Executive Kathleen Falk, and tomorrow, after 7 o'clock, we will hear from Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. The winner of the primary will face Governor Walker in the June 5th recall election. Kathleen Vinehout is a Democratic state senator from Alma and a Democratic candidate for governor, and she joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being here. Well, I start all of these forums the same way. Why are you running for governor?
Thank you. I believe that we need to heal the divisions among us. Our state is torn apart. We need to learn how to respect each other as we debate our differences, and we still will have differences. We need to stop pitting management and business against labor and the public sector against the private sector as though they were enemies. And we need everybody's best effort to create the kind of communities that we want to live in and work in and raise a family and run a business. And not only do we need a new governor, we need a new way to govern. We need a governor that offers real solutions for real people and focuses on the details. And I've spent quite a bit of time during this campaign talking about the details that haven't been paid attention to, not only by this governor, but by governors before him.
What would be the first thing you would do if you were elected governor?
Well, the first thing I would do is change those signs coming into the state. Instead of saying open for business, they should say open for everyone. And that's symbolism, but it's important symbolism. Because I think before we can move the state forward, we need to acknowledge that there is suffering all around the state, and we need to heal that division among us. We face very complex problems, but the wisdom to solve those problems is among the people of this great state, and we need to lift up the voices of those people and bring everyone to the table. And I think those signs symbolize the open for business, as in Wisconsin's for sale. And this is about democracy. This is about the people and lifting up their voices. And even the people on Main Street don't feel that the small businesses don't feel they're part of that in-group that gets all those special breaks from this current governor.
Yeah. What would you do, or would you do anything differently to attract more business to Wisconsin, given that Wisconsin leads the nation in job losses in the past year?
I've advanced something I call a new economic game plan, which is a completely different way to spur economic development. For a long time, we've heard that if taxes are cut, regulations eliminated, and programs slashed, that we will release the private sector to thrive. But that promise hasn't been kept. And we can see that in the study that just came out and the record job loss in Wisconsin. Instead, what we need to do is recognize that the private sector and the public sector are partners. They work together. And if you don't mind an analogy from an old farmer, I think of the public sector as the fertility in the soil and the private sector bringing in the plants. And my Republican colleagues are quick to point out that the public sector doesn't create jobs, the private sector does, but actually they've been draining the nutrients out of the soil and then wondering why the crop isn't what it used to be. And so I think about an example would be the technical colleges. Everywhere I go, all over the state, I see that there are long waiting lists to get into those tech college programs. And yet I hear from businesses around the state that say they want to hire people, but people aren't trained. One of the first things I would do if I balanced that budget differently and actually did propose an alternative budget is to put the tech colleges on the top of the list. Because in a downturn in the economy, we want to get those people into the tech college, retrained, and back out in the workforce as fast as possible. And that's what our tech colleges are great at doing.
Could the budget have been balanced without Act 10?
Thank you. I very much appreciate that question. And the answer is yes, absolutely yes. If I had been governor, I would have accepted the concessions that the employees offered on paying their health insurance and half of their pension. And I would have declared, said thank you very much, declared victory, and moved on. I put together an alternative budget way back a year ago, saying to myself, I respect that the governor doesn't want to raise taxes. I respect that he wants to pay some bills like the payment that was owed to Minnesota on taxes. But I believe that the priorities that he had were wrong for the state. And I set myself to rearrange $500 million in a different way. And I fully funded tech colleges. I funded a lot of veterans programs, which I think that he shouldn't have cut. Very important programs like the needy veterans program, the homeless veterans program. I brought schools up to 85% of what he'd been cut. I funded programs that he should have never cut, like school breakfast and school milk and school transportation. And I reversed those increases on taxes to people of modest means, at like the earned income tax credit and the homestead exemption tax credit, as well as didn't buy the things that he wanted to in terms of the expansion of the charter and voucher programs, the private school programs, the changes that he made in the taxes that were loopholes that he created. There's a number of things that he were new programs that he bought that I wouldn't have bought, including expansions on management contracts.
Did you raise taxes?
No, I did not raise taxes. I respected the fact that he didn't want to raise taxes, and I rearranged the dollars within the existing budget. And I will say, I'm the only person that's running for governor that's actually proposed solutions in terms of real dollars of how I would get to where I want to go in terms of changing the priorities of the state.
So Governor Walker's supporters say that you were among the Democratic state senators, the 14 state senators who should have stayed home and did your job. You should have been fighting for what you just said during that period rather than fleeing the state and going to Illinois.
We gave people time to understand what was happening. You recall that this was a bill that was introduced on Monday and up for final passage on Thursday of the same week. People didn't know what was in this bill, not only the changing in the collective bargaining laws, but the change, massive changes, page after page in that bill was related to changes in the Medicaid, the state's health programs. There was a chipping away of the civil service system that Bob La Follette put in place in 1905, selling off of state assets and no-bid contracts, centralizing power in the governor's office. We gave people time to connect the dots and see what was happening, learn about ALEC and this agenda that was happening all over the country. We gave people time to organize and time to communicate. And when they communicated, they resoundingly said, Kathleen, stay away. In a normal year, I have 5,000 people that contact my office all year. In 3 weeks, I had 27,000 people contact my office, and three quarters of them said, Kathleen, stay away. You have to give us the time to organize. If I hadn't gone to Illinois, I wouldn't have been doing my job.
Kathleen Vinehout is a Democratic state senator from Alma, and she is a candidate for governor. And we will take questions for her in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly sunny and cool. High temperatures ranging from the upper 40s in northern Wisconsin, getting into the upper 50s in the southern part of the state. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 14 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, April the 26th. Coming up this afternoon after 3 o'clock, Ben Marins will be conducting his last day of candidate forums. He's talking with all of the candidates running in the Senate primaries, the recall primaries. He will start today after 3 with Lori Compass, a Democratic candidate for state Senate in the 13th District. Her primary challenger is Gary Ellerman. The winner of this primary will face Republican Scott Fitzgerald coming up in the June 5th recall election. We are talking with Kathleen Vinehout. She is a Democratic state senator from Alma, and she is a Democratic candidate for governor. And our first caller for her is Bill in Madison. Hello, Bill.
Hi. My question is basically about things that Governor Walker has done unilaterally, like the give back of federal money that was supposed to go to people for health care. And I wonder, in general, what unilateral things as governor Kathleen Vonnegut could do, about that. Is there any recovery possible for that money that is going to be missed in our health care system?
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that question. And yes, that is on the top of my to-do list. What the governor did was send back $35 million to the federal government that the previous governor, Governor Doyle, and his administration had gotten in a grant to create something called an affordable health insurance exchange. And what this is a competitive market that the state helps create where private companies compete, and there's transparency. And there, it's very easy for businesses to make apples-to-apples comparison on packages for their employees, health insurance packages. And we've seen this be able to lower costs. It's something that most states have moved forward on. We're one of only 16 states that has not made progress on creating an affordable health insurance exchange. I've spent the last 3 years in the Senate working with various people around the country to create a bill that would do exactly this. I am the only senator or legislator in Wisconsin that has created this kind of a bill. It's something that has been introduced. All the homework has been done. It needs to move forward quickly. All across the state, when I talk with people, I hear small businesses say, Kathleen, if you can fix healthcare, if you can lower costs for health insurance, we can hire more people. This is one of the biggest barriers to entrepreneurs who are starting their own business. They don't want to lose their health insurance. And small businesses and farmers who maybe want to expand, but have this burden of really high health insurance costs. So I think this is one of those issues that hasn't gotten that much attention in this race. We really need to move forward.
It's interesting that you are also a certified organic farmer, and you're a former professor of health services administration. So you got both of those in on that answer.
A bit of a unique background.
Ellen in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Ellen.
Hello. I'm worried about our schools, and I'm worried about our future if we don't have the educated workforce that we need. I'll start way in kindergarten. The lady across the street has a 4-year-old kindergarten, and she's got 27 4-year-olds in her class. I've never heard of that many 4-year-olds in the class. I think in a daycare it would be unlawful.
Yeah. So what about that?
Ellen, thank you so much for that question. And every day I meet parents and teachers and grandparents who are very, very concerned about our school. I put together a 6-point plan on how to work towards fully funding our schools and also changing the formula. First of all, I believe that we need an emergency funding bill in this coming school year. The reason why class sizes are so low is that so many teachers and staff are not employed in the schools that used to be. An audit that just came out from Superintendent Evers showed that more than 2,000 people who used to be employed by the schools are not employed now. We not only need to bring money back into the schools, but we also need to change the funding formula. All of the problems with the formula that existed back in 2010 still exist. So for the inner city areas and anywhere else, we need to recognize that poverty, children who are special needs, children who cannot speak English as their first language, these children need more one-on-one education. And we need to have the people in the schools to help them, and we need the funds to hire those people. And for rural schools, and 60% of the schools across the state that are losing students, we need to recognize in our funding formula that we need a certain amount of money just to open those schools. There's been consolidation around the state, and I don't think we need a lot more consolidation. Instead, I think what we need is a different funding formula that recognizes that the small rural schools are very necessary in our communities, and we need the funding formula that will help them survive. So I suggest that we phase in Tony Evers' Fair Funding for Schools program over the next 2 budgets, and I talk in detail about how to do that on my website. And I very, very much appreciate your concern. I spent some time in Kenosha recently, And I talked with teachers there, and there's many hundreds of teachers that are losing their jobs down there. And they're saying that their school is moving towards class sizes of 45 to 48, where the students sit in front of the computers all day long. And I think if the state doesn't pay attention, the people of the state, to what's happening in Kenosha, I very much fear that that's going to happen all over our state. And this has to be one of the biggest challenges of our new governor, to figure out how to help our schools, because our current governor has created very, very deep problems.
Our next caller is Russ in Seneca. Hello, Russ.
Hi. I want to really briefly comment on the last piece there, because I'll be quite honest. I hold the position that what happens in Kenosha is none of my business, not my problem, and not my situation. That's for the taxpayers of that school district. And you know, as a parent of children who will be entering school, I'd like to have the opportunity to evaluate different school districts and decide to locate my family in the best school district that serves my needs. And I guess that's what I'd like to say regarding the points that were just made. Going back to an earlier point, though, my question was about your budget plan. It sounded like you were very confident that you had an alternative budget plan that would not have raised taxes, that would not have made cuts that were made. I'm of the opinion you don't get something for nothing, so what you're basically telling me is that you would have made those cuts in different places, and I'd like to hear where those places are. Where would you have balanced the budget? Where would you have made those cuts rather than the places that Governor did? Thank you.
Thank you, Russ. I appreciate that question, because a lot of times people don't talk about what they would not have bought. One of the first things I would not have bought is the expansion in the charter and voucher programs. It's too expensive. It's something that we can't afford right now. One of the other things that I would have not bought is expansions in state management contracts. What we see, for example, is that places like the health programs, Medicaid, 40% of those health programs are managed by outside contractors. These are expensive contracts. There are contracts that are broadly written. A recent audit showed that the contract amendments to those contracts, they were not budgeted for. They were not competitively bid. They were never reported to the procurement, accounting, or budgeting offices at the Department of Health. And the state was fined by the federal government $2.7 million. And part of it was because there were over $50 million in unbudgeted contracts. Right now, we have problems with the oversight of state government. And when I looked at the budget and I saw those expansions, I said, this isn't where we need to go. The other thing that happened in the budget is that there was money removed from the general fund that pays for health and education and rated and sent to other funds. And I returned that money to the general fund. And when I did that, one of the things that happened is that we had the money to be able to put money into schools. So there's a lot of things that happened in the budget that I think a lot of people don't know. For example, there were $2 billion in new money coming in. $1.3 billion was changes in the tax code that the governor campaigned against, but then used that money to balance the budget. So a lot of these details are on my website, and I encourage people to go.
Let's take David in Mount Horeb next. Hello, David.
Good morning. One of the things I keep hearing is that Governor Walker didn't raise taxes, and of course he did raise taxes. As long as you consider tuition a tax, which it is, we are taxing the students to go to college, and we've massively increased those taxes, both for the university system and for the technical schools.
All right, because we're almost out of time, how would you stop the hike in tuition costs?
Well, we need to return the dollars that were taken from higher education, and there is a lot of suffering around the state because students can't afford that tuition, and we also need to invest in needs-based financial aid. We need to recognize that not all smart students are rich students.
And we have enough time, though, to ask you, why should a voter vote for you rather than your other primary challengers?
I am right now the candidate that's offering real solutions for real problems for people all around the state. I come from a part of the state that Democrats have to win. And a number of other candidates are saying, well, they're the strongest candidate. And I would say this is not a race about who can get to 48% the fastest. It's about who can get to 51 or 50% plus one on election day. In my part of the state, I won when many, many of my Democratic colleagues lost. Tom Barrett got 3 percentage points less than I did. Russ Feingold got 2 percentage points less than I did in a Republican year. I won by beating an icon in Monroe County at Tommy Thompson's little brother. I believe that when dairy farmers wake up on election day and look at the contrast between Scott Walker, who's been a career politician all of his life, and Kathleen Vinehout, who's trudged out to the barn at 5 a.m. and milked those cows, that they're going to look and they're going to say, here's somebody who's walked in my shoes. And I would say Scott Walker can't afford to lose the votes of the teachers, which he's already lost, and the farmers. And if you don't believe me, consider the fact that he opened his campaign on a dairy farm in western Wisconsin.
We will leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us. Kathleen Vinehout, Democratic State Senator from Alma, candidate for governor. Tomorrow, after 7 o'clock, we will hear from our last Democratic candidate for governor, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. And by the way, we will be conducting a live candidate forum, a candidate debate with Wisconsin Public Television on Friday, May the 4th. The four Democratic candidates running for governor in the recall election will be debating each other on the issues and answering citizen questions. If you would like to be a part of the studio audience, there are some limited seats available. Call 1-800-253-1158. That's 1-800-253-1158 if you'd like to be a part of the studio audience during this May 4th, 7 p.m. debate. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.